This is an eavesdropping conversation. I'm Juliet Fraser, and today I'm talking to Letty Stott. Welcome, Letty.
Hi, Juliet. Thanks so much for inviting me to come talk.
It's my pleasure. It's lovely to see you. Thank you for being with us. I'd like to ask, how do you describe yourself as a musician?
Well, I suppose there are a number of ways I could answer that. I'm a French horn player. That's my trade. I play the French horn professionally, but that's absolutely not what I do 100% of the time. And I think I've got a friend, Jocelyn Lightfoot, who's this wonderful horn player as well. And she once described me as a horn player who sort of earns money playing the horn, but in completely unusual and slightly off-beaten track ways, which I think is lovely. So I think I have maybe branched as far away from the French horn as it's probably possible to get. I do play the French horn still professionally, but I also play lots of other types of horn, ranging from natural horns like cow horns or goat horns or conch shells to manufactured instruments like the carnyx or the cornu, ancient versions of horn. I play instruments from all around the world. Yeah, I've been sort of branching out, working with these more specialist niche horns over the past 5 years. Because there is no music that exists on record, there's very little information about them to start with. I have kind of through that process become much more of a composer, a kind of sound artist, looking at what I can do with these horns and what I as a musician can play on them. So I think my practice now is definitely a lot more sort of multi-genre practice. I'm really interested in history, especially, and archaeology. And I think all of those kind of multidiscipline things that you can bring to a performance, that's definitely something that I try to do. I really research any ancient horns that I'm playing before I record them or play them for anything, and try to bring that kind of knowledge into the performance. I guess I'm a really curious horn player, and I think the French horn remains a great love to me, but I definitely really, really relish playing pretty much any type of horn. I'd say there's probably nothing that you could give me that it resembles a horn that I would say, oh no, take that one away.
And I've seen some pictures of some of them. They stray pretty far from my idea of a French horn, and some of them are incredibly beautiful.
They really are. And I think that's just one element of them. They're so majestic. Nearly all of the instruments I play, they're so arresting visually. They're so striking. They're really magnificent instruments. And I think that's what first captivated me with them, was the kind of visual appearance. And then combined with that, it's the sound. And I've been lucky enough to work with a colleague, Dr. Peter Holmes, who has been incredibly supportive to me. He is an engineer and as well as a musician, and he's made a lot of the instruments that I'm lucky enough to play. And he has written a book recently, which I'd love everyone to go out and buy. It is called Book One, because there will be four eventually. This is just the first of Peter's books. It's Book One, The Horns and Trumpets of the European Iron Age. It's a fascinating book, and it really does describe a lot of the instruments that I'm really hoping to play for the eavesdropping festival.
I'm suddenly concerned, because I've seen at least one of them stands quite tall, and Café Otto doesn't have a terribly high ceiling. Do you think you're going to be able to fit it in?
Yes, they do have a few spatial requirements, some of the horns. Sometimes, because like the carnyx, they go vertically upwards and are pretty nerve-wracking to play, actually, because the head is so heavy. It's really top heavy as an instrument, so it does really wobble around and takes considerable arm strength from the performer. But yeah, some of the other ones are just incredibly loud. And again, it's best not to have an audience member at really close proximity to the bell.
So I'd love to hear a bit about your musical background and the journey that you've gone on to end up doing this very specialised and fascinating sort of work.
Well, I trained very classically. I studied music at Oxford University and then went on to do a postgrad at the Guildhall School of Music. So my route into horn playing has been a very conventional one. However, when I was at the Guildhall, I was lucky enough to study with John Kenny, who is an incredible musician, and his name in Britain is pretty much synonymous with the Carnics. Mm-hmm. He's a fabulous Carnics player based up in Scotland, and he plays other forms of horn as well. I think I saw a recital he was doing at the Guildhall, and he had this kind of smorgasbord of horns all in a row and kind of went from left to right and played all of them. And the one in the middle that really captivated me, I have to say, was the Alp horn. I'd never heard an Alp horn played close by before. I'd seen them, you know, on Swiss chocolate or yes. what have you, but I'd never heard one. And I think the richness and the warmth of the sound, it was so free, it was beautiful. I thought, gosh, I've really got to learn that. So I think the Alp horn was probably the first horn, not a French horn, that I had a go at. And I learned the Alp horn actually having a few lessons from John for my finals at Guildhall. And I think that was probably as well my first kind of foray into like, where else can I play this? What else can I do? I ended up playing the Alp horn for a climate change protest that was going on in Trafalgar Square. It was an all-night vigil. And I got given, I think it was about the 5 a.m. slot. It was just as dawn broke. They thought it'd be lovely. Exactly, if an Alp horn serenaded the House of Parliament. So there was me, you know, my student days, packed up my Alp horn. Got really cold sitting out all night. And then serenaded Westminster with an Alp horn first thing in the morning.
I wish I'd been there. That sounds absolutely amazing. That leads me quite nicely onto this question of defiance, because the topic for the Eavesdropping Forum this year is experiments in defiance. And since you've brought up climate activism, is there a defiance in your music making, would you say?
I think the idea of defiance is really interesting. And I was actually working on a project about 2 weeks ago in North London with lots of professional musicians, and someone floated the idea that by being a musician you are inherently becoming a rebel. And that wasn't an idea that I'd ever thought of before, but they said, yeah, you're expressing something that kind of goes a little bit against the grain. It goes against what perhaps politicians are trying to tell us is the right way of living. It says something a bit different, and it speaks to the heart and speaks very creatively to people. So, yeah, I think I probably am a bit of a rebel in my musical life without having even realised it before. But I think specifically, I love that as a musician, you get to have this voice, you get a creative voice that you can use. And as a brass player, I get to have a loud creative voice, which is brilliant. I think the instruments that I'm going to play for eavesdropping are by their very nature extremely defiant. They have lots of uses, probably far more uses than we will ever know in the societies that they came from in ancient times. And those uses are they're very subtle, very nuanced, and there are an enormous different kind of social context that the instruments played in. But one context which they nearly all have participated in is warfare and battle. Mm-hmm. And I think there is something that calls people to arms through a brass instrument. Brass is still used in the military context throughout the world. And I think it's that kind of arresting loud noise that brings people together and potentially challenges something. It challenges something that's going on and can be used in a kind of battle context. And I think the instrument that I play, I'm hoping to play at eavesdropping, which can be extremely loud, but obviously I'll play it very very subtly, is a Greek instrument from ancient Greece. It's the Greek salpinx, and that, as an ancient horn, I love it. It's really simple. It's very simple. It's just a long tube with a cup bell at the end. It was used in all parts of Greek society, but it's synonymous with Athena, who is the goddess of war. And I absolutely love playing it, because obviously I sort of channel Athena when I play it. But it's also the instrument. It's the first ever recorded instance of a female brass player that we've ever had. There was a salpinx player in ancient Greece, long time ago, and her name was Aglaïs. And she's the first recorded brass player that we've ever had. And I think this idea of defiance, I definitely see that as brass instruments having a voice. But also, my particular campaign is female brass players having a voice. And I have a company, Gender and the Large and Shiny Instruments, which looks to channel female and non-binary musicians to kind of raise the profile and try and just sort of challenge the status quo about what symphony orchestras and their brass makeup might look like, looking at ideas of inclusion, diversity, and kind of gender advocacy. So yeah, I feel like the instruments I've chosen to play, maybe it's no surprise that I've gone towards these loud, noisy brass instruments that do have all these associations with battle, with military, with war, but also I feel can be really useful in a modern way to look at, yeah, kind of other more subtle social ideas, gender being just one of those.
You've made all the hairs on the back of my arm stand up with excitement. I'd love to hear a bit what's exciting you creatively at the moment. Where are your creative energies focused?
Yeah, well, it feels like everything is expanding at the moment creatively for me. I've been looking into these kind of ancient forms of horn for about 5 years now. And the first catalyst to me being able to work with them kind of professionally was I was lucky enough to have a residency at Aldeburgh, St. Maltings, which was great. So that was a really exciting time just to kind of test things out and see what they could do. And I think what I'm aiming for as a musician is never to play something that would have been the same as the sound in Roman times. We can't do that. I'm not a Roman musician. We have no idea what musicians used to play on the instruments or exactly how they sounded. All I can do is work with these very close analogues of historical instruments and use my skills as a modern day female brass player and just see what happens. So and so far it's going okay. So a project I'm working on at the moment is a big project with several composers in Madrid. We're going to be in Madrid the end of February, which is really exciting. We've been working with, it's the second part of this project of working with composers who are writing for instruments, and they're writing for myself and John Kenny. And I'm going to play the cornu, a copy of a Roman cornu de Pompeii, which is huge. It's a massive instrument, really beautiful, very elegant. And John's going to play the carnets. We're working on a piece at the moment, which is going to be for chamber orchestra, and then those two instruments, soloists. And potentially, this is the first time in history that the cornu and the carnix have ever played together. We know that these instruments were around at the same period in history. And we know, for example, they were certainly around geographically in the same place, somewhere like Vindolanda, which is somewhere else I'm working with a lot in the coming months, which is on Hadrian's Wall, for anyone who isn't quite familiar with Vindolanda.
I walked it a few months ago. Absolutely incredible. Yeah,
it really is absolutely incredible. And I think at that point, there would have been a carnix potentially being played and a cornu being played sort of from across the wall. So the project in February is bringing these instruments together for the same at the same time, which is a really exciting opportunity. And we're working with Lior Rosner, who's a film composer, and he wrote a bit of Game of Thrones. He's written loads of really exciting dramatic material for us to have a go at. So I think that's going to be really great. And then, yeah, as I just mentioned, I'm working on a few projects at Vindolanda. Big news for me. There was a mouthpiece, a Roman mouthpiece, found last year on Hadrian's Wall, and it is phenomenal. It's the first, well, archaeological part of an instrument that I've ever seen, not in a museum. And I was lucky enough to see it in September last year, which is very close to when it was found. It had just about kind of been polished up and was able to be viewed. And a lady at Vindolanda, very kindly, she brought it into the cafe because I'd said, oh, I'd love a look at it, and just unwrapped it from this sandwich bag. And I saw right in front of me this Roman mouthpiece in incredible condition. It really is unbelievably well preserved. It's beautiful. And that will go on public display at Easter this year in April. So to mark that just before it goes on public display, Peter Holmes, who I mentioned previously, Peter's made a 3D copy of this mouthpiece, which is incredible. And we've also got a 3D copy of a Roman tuba, the Zambek tuba, which has been mentioned an awful lot in historical literature, but no one's ever made one. And no one's ever played one with an incredibly accurate copy of a Roman mouthpiece. So again, it's kind of a year of firsts at Vindolanda. At Easter, I'll be playing, hopefully, this copy of the Roman mouthpiece with a Roman tuba And we'll see what comes out of the woodwork. It's quite a spooky, quite atmospheric place.
Well, I hope it sounds good. That'd be a bit disappointing if it just sort of goes.
Don't worry, I've already had a test and it sounds magnificent.
That's so interesting, Letty. To finish, I wonder if you can give us a few tidbits of what we might hear when you perform for us at eavesdropping. You've mentioned some of the instruments or perhaps some of the challenges of bringing those instruments to us. But can you give us a glimpse into what you're planning?
Yeah, of course. I'm hoping to bring down a number of different instruments, some of which are a little bit secretive at the moment because they don't quite exist. I'm in a really lovely position of working on a lot of projects at the moment, rebuilding a lot of these ancient horns. So I'm really hoping to feature a few of those. But overall, with any of these ancient horns, my performance will be looking at kind of getting a sense of what the instrument wants to say. And I think, especially for the pieces that I'm hoping to perform, as a horn player, I cannot just impose my will compositionally upon any of these instruments. They all have their distinct voice and distinct character and personality. And you've just got to work with that. You know, for a lot of these instruments, they have a number of pitches, some greater than others. But it's really looking at what they want to say, and you as almost a conduit to what you can do musically, which is something I absolutely love. So I'm really hoping to bring down the lituus, which is another Roman instrument, but it's from Etruscan societies, and that is an incredibly mysterious instrument. It's beautiful. I think the sound is really, it's really spooky. It's quite a thin sound, and the lituus is like a very long, very thin, quite small, tiny kind of alp horn style. So a very long tube and then a small curved bell. And the lituus that I have been lucky enough to play is called the Pian de Civita left lituus. It was found, the original, so this is an exact copy. It was found buried beneath a sacred building. And anyone entering this sacred building had to step over the buried lituus to get into the building. And this lituus was found bent into three so that it could never be played again. And the mouthpiece end had been completely destroyed, covered. And it was also found a little bit more tragically with the body of a small child and a folded shield. And it's just kind of the power, the symbolism of this instrument is astonishing. So whenever I play it, and I'll be playing that at eavesdropping, it produces these really just ethereal sounds. And I think you do get a sense that there's more going on. There's more to it. It's certainly not just a musical instrument. It's a really powerful sound tool that is communicating a lot more than just the notes that come out of the bell.
It sounds like it's speaking across the world somehow, because you've told us it's on this threshold. It feels, you know, it feels like it's speaking to the beyond or from the beyond or something.
Exactly. And the instrument itself was designed to do that. So the kind of long pipe is wrapped with a kind of coil. The whole thing's made of bronze. It's a really solid instrument. And the idea was that the tubing is kind of a conduit. The bell rests on the ground. The bell is anchored in the earth. And then this conduit with player, I suppose, produces a sound, and the sound links up to the heavens and to the gods. So it really is channeling something a little bit spooky.
And where was it buried? Where was it found?
It was found in Tuscany. Which is where quite a lot of the instruments have come from, sort of Etruscan society. Obviously, really interesting society. We don't know too much about it because a lot of Etruscan instruments and any sort of records were destroyed by the Romans, who potentially, I think they were quite frightened of the Etruscans and their power, so they really tried to annihilate them. But from what we've got, they were an incredible society, really sophisticated, with lots of strong females, really important in Etruscan culture. So yeah, it's a kind of web that I'm so fascinated by, and I love trying to unpick these little strands that come through.
That's absolutely amazing, Letty. I feel like there are about a million more questions that I have for you now, but I think we better just wrap up. So sure. I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for talking with me, and thank you for being part of this year's festival.
Oh, you're really welcome. I can't wait. I think, yeah, hopefully we can channel some slightly disruptive spirits through these horns.
I'm sure. So please do join us, listeners, for Letty's performance in the Eavesdropping Festival on Friday, the 31st of March at Cafe Otto. And you can find out more about what we do by visiting www.eavesdropping.london. You have been listening to an Eavesdropping conversation. Our new jingle was composed for us by Iza Otoya.